This is Air America Radio News. I'm Wayne Gilman. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, says North Korea needs to be told in no uncertain terms that the test firing of long-range missiles this past weekend and this morning was unacceptable. Bolton says the United Nations Security Council must send a strong signal about that. While Bolton underscored the seriousness of the matter, he called on the U.N. to move ahead in a calm and deliberate manner. Meanwhile, White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says North Korea's actions were in defiance against the world, not just the United States. President Bush is yet to personally comment on the firing of the missiles. Bush instead had immigration reform on his mind this morning. He paid a visit in the past hour to a Dunkin' Donuts in Alexandria, Virginia, where he touted how two Iranian immigrants were able to achieve an American dream of running a successful business. At the same time, he commended the business owners for hiring legally other immigrants. State Secretary Condoleezza Rice, during a press briefing with the Turkish Foreign Minister, acknowledged the strong reaction at the United Nations over North Korea's long-range missile testing. State Secretary said that stronger efforts will be made this week to get the North Koreans back to the scene of the Six Nation talks. The United States was joined by Japan and the United Kingdom this morning in drafting a resolution to deny funds and technology to North Korea in response to the defiance to the missile testing. One of the key players in the Enron Corporation scandal suffered a fatal heart attack this morning in Aspen. Founder and former chair of the one-time energy giant, Kenneth Lay, succumbed to an attack at his Colorado home around 3 in the morning. He was convicted a little over a month ago on fraud and conspiracy charges in connection with the utility company's collapse. Lay was a close friend of the family of President George W. Bush. He maintained his innocence during his trial. He remained adamant about being in the dark about many of the accounting schemes that brought the company down. Federal Reserve Board Chairman Ben Bernanke has some tough decisions ahead of him. New Wall Street Journal survey of 56 economic forecasters suggests that the Federal Reserve's actions on short-term interest rates over the next few months will determine the direction of the economy. According to the survey, inflation is set to rise while growth will likely slow in the upcoming months. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Brown rice recipes, visit them on the web. Enjoy Mahatma or Carolina rice. It's good for you.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. The USO receives no government funding and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people. To find out more, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
Update your kitchen with custom cabinet refacing from Sears. Your kitchen can look like new again in about 4 to 6 days without the cost, time, or mess of totally remodeling. See for yourself. Call 1-800-300-8065 for a free design consultation. Call right now and save $500 on select styles. Sears offers over 100 door and drawer combinations to suit any budget and style. And best of all, with Sears, your satisfaction is guaranteed. So don't replace your kitchen cabinets, reface them. Call Sears at 1-800-300-8065 and save $500 on select styles. Offer ends 7/29/06. License number available upon request, not available in all areas. See associate or ask your consultant for written limited warranty details. Custom cabinet refacing from Sears. 1-800-300-8065. Call now at 1-800-300-8065.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to help solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-661-0491.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. They don't go away on their own. The IRS can attach your wages, your pension, your savings, even your Social Security checks. If you owe back taxes, don't despair. Since 1997, our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-661-0491 now. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-661-0491. That's 800-661-0491.
If you're a diabetic, you'll want to listen to this message from the Diabetes Line. If you call us today, you may be able to get your testing supplies delivered right to your door with no out-of-pocket costs. We have all the supplies you'll ever need, and getting those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your door is as easy as calling this number. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254. If you have Medicare or private insurance, you might be able to get those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your home with no out-of-pocket costs. We even file all the claim forms so you never have to wait for those reimbursement checks. If you're a diabetic and you want testing supplies delivered right to your door, call the Diabetes Line 24 hours a day. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, happy 5th of July. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations all across the United States, Sirius Satellite Radio, WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, AirAmericaRadio.com, CRN Digital. The United Nations Development Program has come right out and said it. Busting down trade barriers does not reduce poverty. Interesting. We'll get into that and more as time goes on here. Our quote for the day, by the way, from John Quincy Adams. Posterity. You will never know how much it's cost my generation to preserve your generation. I hope you will make good use of it. Coming up on today's program, by the way, Jeffrey Feldman is here. On the frame, we the Democrats. In the third hour, I'll be challenging conservative Ken Hoagland on his idea to abolish all federal taxes, of all things. Right now, Dr. Brad Rodeau is with us. He's a professor of medicine and holder of an endowed chair in tobacco harm reduction research at the University of Louisville. Dr. Rodeau, am I pronouncing your name right?
That's correct.
Great. Great to have you with us. Before we get into this topic of tobacco, which I find fascinating, I just wanted to ask you a question. As a professor of medicine, is it possible to, you know, the old spy story thing of giving somebody a heart attack in a way that looks like a heart attack and nobody knows that it's not a heart attack, is that something that's actually fairly easy to do? Hello? You're still up. This is not a trick question. It's got nothing to do. Maybe he's gone. I don't know. Well, apparently he's not there. We'll wait to hear from him. The reason I ask is Ken Lay just died of a heart attack, and I'm curious. Was Ken Lay the guy who knew too much? But I don't know. We'll find out. In any case, Brad Rodeau, I'm showing him up on the board here, but not on the line with us. We'll try it again. Okay, Dr. Rodeau, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay. My question to predicate all this, since you're a professor of medicine, was Ken Lay just died of a heart attack, and there's some suspicion that he was the guy who knew too much. You think it was just a heart attack?
Well, hard to tell from press reports.
Yeah.
I'm going to pass on that question.
Okay, I understand. Now, you've come out and taking this to the larger topic. The tobacco industry is really taking a hit. Their product, it's the only product that we sell in the United States legally that actually kills people when it's used as directed. And you're encouraging people to switch, if I'm reading this correctly, encouraging people to switch from cigarettes to smokeless forms of tobacco. Why?
Well, we have 45 million smokers in the United States, and over 400,000 of them are dying every year because they can't quit in time. They can't quit nicotine. They can't quit tobacco in time to avoid a deadly illness. And so for those people for which abstinence doesn't work, we are suggesting that they consider an alternative form of nicotine in smokeless tobacco that delivers tobacco satisfaction at about 2% the health risks of smoking.
Now,
it's harm reduction.
Chewing tobacco and snuff contain 28 known carcinogens. The nitrosamines are the most harmful of those. Levels much higher than other types of nitrosamines that are allowed in foods like bacon or beer. They contain volatile nitrosamines, benzopyrene, volatile aldehydes, formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, benzopyrene, polonium-210, arsenic, nickel, cadmium. Why would you want people to consume these? Why not simply say, quit smoking? We've lost Dr. Rodu again. Okay. Apparently.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, are you still there?
Is this the...
We're still on the air, apparently.
Hello?
Yes. Apparently, we have a problem with our phones. We're just going to move along. We'll try and organize this some other time. Dr. Rodu, if you can hear me, thank you for being with us. We can't hear you, and apparently you can't hear us, and so we're going to take this thing someplace else, and I'm going to move on. Other topics, as it were. Today, July 5th, 1935, the Wagner Act was introduced. The Wagner Act was also known as the National Labor Relations Act. This has been under attack by Republicans virtually since the day of its introduction. It was, as HistoryChannel.com notes, a tremendous boon for America's workers. Along with granting workers the right both to strike and to freely select their own union via voting, the Wagner Act also clamped down on unfair labor practices by management, which encompassed a myriad of methods designed to prevent workers from organizing. Now we have the Bush administration coming right back and saying, okay, we're going to use the National Labor Relations Board, which is supposed to be defending labor, that board that was created by the Wagner Act today, July 5th, 1935. We have the Bush administration saying, we're going to use that to be anti-labor. We're going to use that to destroy labor. This a novel idea pioneered by Ronald Reagan. And grim stuff it is. Also on this day in history, on July 5th, 1946, French designer Louis Reard unveiled the bikini in a popular swimming pool in Paris. He named it after the Bikini Atoll in the Pacific Ocean, where just a week earlier, the United States had blown up a good chunk of the island with an atomic test that everyone seemed to think was just a fine idea, except for the people who lived on the Bikini Atoll or islands nearby. And so anyway, the bikini on this day in history. Interesting, I just want to toss out a few things here. And by the way, let me just bring this back to Ken Lay. Ken Lay died apparently overnight or this morning of a heart attack. Ken Lay, the guy who knew so much. Perhaps the guy who knew too much. Am I like wandering into the realm of just absolutely over the top conspiracy theory? I mean, think about the last time there was somebody who represented a real serious political threat to a Bush president. Now, Ken Lay, the guy who was having the secret meetings with Cheney to come up with the energy policy. Ken Lay, the largest lifetime patron of the political career of George W. Bush. Ken Lay, who created Enron out of a deregulation that he personally lobbied Bush Sr. for. Ken Lay, who knows where all the bodies are buried. Ken Lay, who had the private meeting with Arnold Schwarzenegger in Beverly Hills just before the rolling blackouts hit California from Ken Lay's company, Enron, that brought down Gray Davis, and guess who's now governor of California? And I look back at the last time there was somebody who knew, who was in serious trouble, and who knew too much for a Bush president. Ken Lay, in October, was going to be sentenced. So now would be the time that he'd be cutting deals with prosecutors, right? And I just look back to 1987, when William Casey, who had been the campaign manager, the campaign director, the director of George Herbert Walker Bush's presidential campaign, the successful campaign, And what was it, in 84, I believe it was. And, or was it 86, whatever year it was. And Bill Casey, or excuse me, this would have been, 84, this would have been the Reagan-Bush campaign. And it was Bill Casey was the guy that, according to Barbara Honegger and Gary Sick and others who've written about this, actually engineered the October surprise in the election of 1980, where he went over and cut a deal with the Iranians and said, you hold on to the hostages, it'll make Jimmy Carter look bad, and Ronald Reagan, who was viewed at the time as a right-wing crackpot by the majority of Americans and was down 6 points in the polls, Ronald Reagan will become president, and then we'll sell you spare parts and missiles. And that worked out. And the guy who knew about that was William Casey. They made him, after he was successfully the campaign director, they made him the director of the CIA. Well, he was called to testify before the Senate under oath. And he told his lawyer, Milton Gould, he was going to tell the entire truth. The morning of his testimony, the morning that he was supposed, that afternoon, he was supposed to go testify before Congress about the possibility that George Herbert Walker Bush had cut a deal with the Iranians to flip a U.S. election in 1980. The morning before his testimony, the morning of his testimony, he suddenly has a seizure at his headquarters and CIA office in Langley, Virginia, falls over. They haul him away on a stretcher, take him to Bethesda Naval Hospital, open up his skull, and take out the part of his brain that controls speech, Broca's region. They did a surgical, they for all practical purposes, cut out his tongue. He died 6 months later from complications of the surgery, but was never able to speak. Hours before he was supposed to testify, William Casey. And now today, Ken Lay, is he cutting a deal with prosecutors? Suddenly he has a heart attack. Am I crazy? Maybe. I don't know. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is Vilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
America's working poor recently suffered another body blow in the Congress. But you probably missed the news since it barely made a blip on the media establishment's radar. The blow came in the Senate, which voted down a modest increase in our nation's minimum wage. This is front page news to millions of families that are trying to survive on jobs that pay at or near a minimum wage that's been stuck at $5.15 an hour for nearly a decade. But the media barons, who devote lavish coverage to the prosperity being enjoyed by the economic elites, don't see this as a story. The New York Times, for example, relegated it to a single paragraph on page 22 at the tail end of a column covering eight other topics. Had they deigned to look into the story, here are a few important facts they would have found. There are 7.3 million Americans presently working for minimum wage. Another 8.2 million of us are paid only a dollar or less above the minimum. 72% of minimum wage workers are adults. The average worker brings home more than half of the family's weekly income. A third bring home 100% of their family's earnings. 60% of these workers are women. 760,000 are single moms. $5.15 an hour is a gross pay of $10,500 a year for full-time work, poverty pay. The last increase in the minimum wage has been entirely eroded by inflation. The purchasing power of $5.15 today is the equivalent of $4.23 in 1997, the year the wage was raised from 4.25 an hour. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not merely an economic story, but a deeply moral issue, especially at a time when workers have greatly increased productivity and helped generate historic levels of growth and profits. If the media chieftains wonder why they're losing readers and viewers, they might note that they callously ignore news of real importance to ordinary folks.
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing? On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder. Millions of jobs are being exported. And now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout. America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect the workers' right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Lord knows how I loathe this place called Tobacco Road, but it's home.
Yes, indeed. Well, as I said, the tobacco industry, they're up to it again. We're going to try and get this guy back on at the bottom of the hour, because I do want to have this conversation about what's going on. The tobacco industry trying to figure out, trying to make some lemonade out of the lemon of people, you know, their customers dying. But we'll get back to that. The United Nations has come right out and said, hey, it ain't working. It ain't working. In a 152-page report released last week, this is from an article by Paul Weissman in today's USA Today, the UN Development Program, UNDP, disputes the U.S. position that busting down trade barriers is the surest way to reduce poverty. Right? I mean, we've been saying this for, well, since Reagan. If we just do away with trade barriers, then that'll do away with poverty. Right? In other words, well, not in other words. I mean, here's how it works from the point of view of the multinational corporations. Well, here's a real-life example. Jack Welch was president, CEO, chairman, whatever he was, of General Electric. And he goes over to India to try to sell them, as I recall, it was an electric power plant. And this there was a great article about this in the Wall Street Journal about a year ago. And while he's there, the guy that he's talking to says to him, hey, you know, we can do a lot of things here in India for you, for General Electric, at a whole lot lower cost. You know, we can handle your back office stuff. We can handle your bookkeeping. We can handle your telephone service. We can do a lot of things because we have an English-speaking workforce. And, you know, telephone calls are getting cheaper and cheaper, so give it a try. And Jack Welch said, yeah, I'll try it out. And he was the first. He started the trend of outsourcing white-collar and pink-collar jobs, following, obviously, on the trend of outsourcing blue-collar jobs. So anyhow, the theory has been that the cons have been promoting, cons like Tom Friedman and Bill Clinton and George Bush and Ronald Reagan, economic cons. The theory has been, well, if you just don't have tariffs to protect domestic industries, in other words, if you don't have an import tax on things, then you can import stuff into the United States, it'll be cheaper, and that's going to somehow reduce poverty, because people will be able to buy stuff at a lower price at Walmart, and because of that lower price at Walmart, they'll be able to have a higher standard of living. What it completely overlooks is the fact that they no longer have a decent paycheck. Now they're flipping burgers, or having to join the army, instead of having a good manufacturing job, because the manufacturing jobs that used to pay decent wages, because companies used to have to hire Americans in America, because we used to have tariffs, we used to have these protective tariffs that protected our domestic industries, where we said, hey, if there's, you know, a dollar's worth of labor, in a pair of tennis shoes made in the United States and 10 cents worth of labor, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Malaysia. You can make them in Malaysia, but when you import them into the United States, you have to pay a 90-cent tax to balance that labor. We used tariffs, that tax called a tariff. We used tariffs to protect our domestic industries. And basically, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush tore down those tariffs with NAFTA and GATT and WTO, and Ross Perot was right. That crazy old coop from Texas, he was right. But still they say it. I mean, here Tom Friedman's latest book, The World is Flat, and he's got people actually read this nonsense. And so, oh, it makes sense to me. Without realizing what it is that's going on. It increases profits for big companies like General Electric, it increases profits for multinational corporations. But what's it doing for the American workforce? What's it doing for the workforce of any country? It's harming them. And here now, the UN Development Program has come up with this 152-page report. And in the UN agency advises poor Asian countries to do what Japan and South Korea did successfully in the 1970s and 1980s, protect key industries temporarily with tariffs. You get this? The UN Development Agency saying, you want your country to be economically strong? Go back to tariffs. We had tariffs in the United States from 1787. We had tariffs in the United States from 1787 until Ronald Reagan started dismantling them, and Bill Clinton finally tore most of them apart. We still have a few tariffs, but they average around 1.8%. Not enough to protect our domestic industries. And so we don't make textiles in the United States anymore. We don't make shoes in the United States anymore. We don't make TVs in the United States anymore. We don't make computers in the United States. We don't make anything in the United States anymore. Because it's cheaper to make it overseas because the labor's over there. Except for houses and things. And for that, you bring in people who are not citizens who will work for less. It's all about cheap labor because cheap labor is all about increasing profits. Free trade advocates, writes Paul Wiseman in today's USA Today, assume that freer and freer trade will create greater and greater wealth, says Walden Bellow, executive director of the anti-poverty group Focus on the Global South in Bangkok. He says, but experience has shown this is not the case. It ain't the case. And now here you have the United Nations finally coming out and saying the emperor of so-called free trade has no clothes. What it's doing is it's making multinational corporations richer and richer, and it's making average working people all around the world poorer and poorer. Even people in those poor countries to which the jobs are supposedly being exported. They're getting poorer too. 27 minutes past the hour.
Looking for a reason to try online dating? Match.com has 15 million of them, with our 15 million members. And now, here's one more.
You do want to make a good first impression. You do want to step up and put your best foot forward.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
Summer's here, and that means lots of disgusting little ants marching through your yard and into your home. Used to be almost impossible to get rid of them, but not anymore. Now there's Grant's Ant Stakes, and they're guaranteed to work. Grant's Ant Stakes are different. They contain a unique baiting system that ants simply can't resist. They eat the bait, they share it with the rest of the colony, and they all die. Total colony elimination. Grant's kills ants. Guaranteed. Look for Grant's at your favorite stores, and take control.
Were you lucky enough to get an iPod for Christmas? If you did, now maybe you need some accessories. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics. We're the largest Apple dealer in New England, and we've got iPod accessories coming out of our... Oops. We've got a lot of iPod accessories. Like the Small Dog Groove Cube, a portable pair of speakers for your iPod, which cost only $29.95. Or the HipPod, a hip-attaching carrying case with external speakers for $25. Stay warm this winter in a Burton iPod jacket. For the family, maybe it's time for a home theater system. We bundle a Mac Mini, THX sound system, and an LCD projector. It's adjustable up to 300 inches diagonal for only $1,400.
Visit smalldog.com or call them at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-MACS. Tell them Tom Hartman sent you.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
FedEx has until July 14th to answer a National Labor Relations Board charge that the company engaged in a pattern of illegal anti-union actions against its workers in New Jersey. The NLRB-issued complaint says that FedEx fired some workers trying to organize a union, threatened others, and promised preferential treatment for workers who voted against the union. Gerald Curtin, a lawyer representing the workers, says the NLRB scheduled a hearing on this charge for July 31st. FedEx workers at the Barrington, New Jersey terminal are the first FedEx workers in the country to go union, and FedEx is fighting the workers' choice to organize.
Today marks the last day of the National Education Association's representative meeting in Orlando, Florida. A top issue on the plate for the annual meeting was the pay of teachers nationwide. The NEA, which claims 2.8 million members, is taking the position that there should be a national minimum wage for teachers in the United States of at least $40,000 a year. The higher starting salary will help address the potential teacher crisis coming down the line as thousands of current educators retire and school systems struggle to retain and attract new teachers. Donna DeCry is president of the South Dakota Education Association.
We will need to be able to bring in new teachers at a salary in which they can live. Right now, it's very difficult for young student or non-traditional student to come in and start teaching, be able to pay for a car payment, a house payment, get married, have children. It's very difficult on a beginning salary.
According to the NEA, experts predict a need of more than 2 million new teachers over the next decade, with the need being highest in urban areas where the turnover rate of new teachers fleeing the profession stands at 50% during their first 5 years of teaching.
World Trade Organization talks are at an impasse over agricultural issues for developing nations versus the continuing demand by industrialized countries for greater penetration into the markets of developing countries. Guy Ryder of the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions says that no sustainable solution can involve the worsening of poverty and unemployment in countries that already face a major challenge. And he says if industrialized nations win an agreement that undermines developing countries, it'll also hurt working people in industrialized nations. Here's today's economic report. According to a report from the Center on American Progress, the overall U.S. economy grew by 5.6% in the first quarter of 2006. But America's middle-class working families still are not benefiting. Housing, health care, transportation, and education expenses continue to eat up larger shares of family incomes as wages fail to keep pace with rising prices. The squeeze on working families felt over the last 5 years as wages have failed to grow in real terms is expected to continue for the rest of the year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When you struggle with credit card bills every month, you're not just in debt. Debt is all around you.
I see people every day that are on the brink. They're going to go over the edge, and at the bottom is bankruptcy, and we pull them back.
The people who provide Care One Credit Counseling Services know how to help you get out of debt and get on with your life. So call now, 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019. We can help you stop the collection calls, pay off your debt sooner, and save up to 57% every month.
You do get to consolidate your payments. You only have to worry about making one payment a month instead of making three or four or five.
Call for licensing details. Get out of debt and get on with your life. Gather up your bills and talk to the people who can help, to the people who care. Call Care One Credit Counseling now. 800-297-3019. 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
When you're outside.
you want to twist and shout when you're inside out.
And welcome, Truth in Broadcasting, the Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour. The United Nations coming right out and saying, no, free trade doesn't work. Doesn't work. In fact, here's one of the points. They say one problem, inexperienced trade negotiators from poor countries are frequently outmaneuvered and enter into trade pacts in unfavorable terms. Before it joined the World Trade Organization in 2004, for example, impoverished Cambodia agreed to expose its farmers to more competition than the wealthy European Union and the United States were willing to accept for theirs, even though more than 80% of Cambodians live on farms, according to the anti-poverty group Oxfam International. You see, what happens is you go to so-called free trade, and you end up with national policy, national economic policy, being made by multinational corporations. And they're gonna work for what's in best interest of the multinational corporations, which in many cases, not all, but in many cases, is not what's in the best interest of the people of the country. Alan in Arlington, Texas on the line. Our number, 866-440-8466. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted you to kind of speak to another conservative free trade argument that I've heard that basically says if we convert the agricultural economies of China and India and the like to industrial economies by outsourcing our jobs to them, that in the long run it'll be good because it'll eventually drive up wages there, giving them capital to trade with us, to buy more products from us.
Right.
I see a lot of holes in this, but I wanted to see what you saw.
Well, just follow the logic of it for a minute. I mean, you know, let's just map the thing out, as it were. Let's say right now the average Chinese is making 50 cents an hour, and they're industrializing, and they are industrializing. I'm not sure what their average wage is, but let's say it's 50 cents an hour. And the theory that the Thomas Friedmans of the world and the other cons would have you believe is that, well, that's going to create a, you know, enough, as the Chinese wage goes up, it's going to create, two things are going to happen. One, it's going to create a large consumer class in China. They're going to want to buy more stuff from us, they say. They're going to want to buy more of our things, like blue jeans.
Even though our infrastructure will, you know, our manufacturing
will be gone. Right.
Will be gone.
Well, that's where I'm going with this. You know, obviously.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember back during the debate, you know, with Ross Perot, somebody said, well, you know, they'll just want to buy our blue jeans. Well, I'm sorry. Levi Strauss last year closed the last blue jean manufacturing factory in the United States. There's a Union Line, I think is the company. There's one company that makes blue jeans in the United States, but Levi's doesn't make them anymore. So, but in any case, the point is that they say, well, as you create something close to a consumer class in China, that they will buy things from us. Well, number one, no, they're going to buy things domestically. Number two, they say over time those wages are going to go up. So, okay, the Chinese wage goes up to $2 an hour, or $3 an hour, or $4 an hour, or even $5 an hour, the average Chinese wage. How does that help Americans? It doesn't. What you're doing is, you know, this great equalizing, as it were. I mean, we're going from a world where, in the industrialized world, you had probably about a billion workers, and that is, you know, 400 or 500 million in Europe, a million or more, well, arguably, I'd say maybe 300 million maximum in Europe of a workforce, maybe even 200 million, 100 million in the United States, 120 million or so workers. I don't know if you could argue that Mexico is industrialized, Brazil, parts of, you know, but let's say you had an industrialized workforce of a quarter to a half a billion people. Now we have twice as many people in the industrialized workforce. What that does is it simply drops in half the wage for those people who do manufacturing, regardless of where they are in the world. I mean, that's the great equalizing effect. Dropping in half the wages is going to do two things. It's going to moderately reduce prices, although fundamentally prices are a function of what the marketplace will bear, not what the manufactured cost is. And number two, it's going to increase profits. And that's really what it's all about. It's all about increasing profits for CEOs.
Plus, last thing, these countries, especially China, are going to struggle to have you know, relative wage increases because they don't have the human rights protections that would allow them to more easily unionize.
Right. Well, and in fact, I mean, it always comes back to David Ricardo, you know, the economist, the British economist who in 1812 wrote a treatise called On Labor, and in 1814, and in 1816 wrote one called On Profits. And in those two papers, basically Ricardo said the cost of labor, the wages the people are able to demand from employers is a function of the ratio of the number of available workers to the number of jobs that need to be done. And when there's more workers than there are jobs, labor can't demand high prices and wages will fall to what Ricardo called a subsistence level. In other words, just enough to prevent starvation, which is the Victorian world of Scrooge and Marley. And when the labor force is relatively smaller compared to the number of jobs, then wages will rise. And that's been the history in the United States of, as industrialization happened and there were more and more jobs, at the same time you had organized labor working to reduce the number of workers by passing laws that said the children couldn't be in the workforce. You know, as much as a quarter, depending on whose numbers you look at, somewhere between a quarter and a third of the entire American workforce in 1900 was kids. And you know, that became illegal, so that knocks out a third of the workforce. So now the cost of labor goes up, which is one of the reasons why the cons so hated that they actually got the Supreme Court in 1913, to strike down child labor laws. And, you know, it wasn't until Roosevelt came in, we got put it back into place, and mandating that you can't force people to work more than 50 hours a week back then. It later became 40-hour, but the 50-hour work week was something that and these were all to reduce the supply of labor, to drive up the cost of labor, to create a middle class. And if you've got a billion people in China, and you've got a billion people in Africa, and you've got a billion people in the rest of Asia, and you've got a billion people in South America and Central America, and corporations are going to try and bring them all into the massive labor pool to all compete for that same 250, 300 million, maybe 400 million manufacturing jobs, you're going to see the cost of manufacturing just drop down to, down to a lowest common denominator of $2-3 an hour. And it's going to hit the United States, too, as we are seeing, as we have been seeing ever since this started under Reagan.
A race to the bottom. Those countries need internal political change. Somebody's going to have to fight. Now, I don't see, for them to genuinely improve for across the classes, that's what they're going to need.
Right, and that's why countries have national industrial policies, and that's why countries have tariffs, and that's why countries have membranes, essentially, that, which are their legal membranes, things like tariffs and trade laws, that protect their domestic industries and say to other countries, hey, if you want to get your act together, fine, but we're keeping our act together here. And that's what we have done away with this insane so-called free trade.
Yeah. Enjoy the show.
Thanks a lot, Alan. Good to hear from you. Mark in Houston, Texas. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Well, the whole principle really is skewed. My initial point was that exporting jobs to China and the idea of, the Chinese wage increasing to where they can buy things from us, well, I don't see the wage over there increasing like you just mentioned.
Well, it actually has been slowly increasing, but what happens is they buy stuff that's made in China.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What I said is the wage in China has been actually steadily increasing, particularly in the big cities, not hugely, but incrementally, because the labor market is tightening up, and a small middle class is emerging in some of the cities, particularly Shanghai and Beijing. But the result of that is not that the Chinese are wanting to buy American goods. Why would they want to buy something that has to be shipped all the way across the Pacific Ocean, particularly something that's more expensive than something they can make in China? The result of that is that an internal industrial market is growing in China, just like it did in the United States between 1870 and 1980.
Well, if
they're industrializing their own country,
right? And if all manufacturing goes to China, they won't be buying manufactured goods from the U.S. and they won't be buying agricultural goods because they already produce those themselves. They won't be buying technology because they make that themselves. The only thing they really could buy from the U.S. would be weapons.
No, and, well, yes, although they're manufacturing weapons like crazy over there, too. No, the main thing that they're buying from the United States right now, and this is absolutely the case, the main thing that the Chinese are buying from the United States is raw materials. They're buying minerals from us. They're buying oil from us. We actually export oil to China, even though we import oil from elsewhere. They're buying trash from us, oddly enough, and recycling it. Junk steel, for example, and building things. I mean, they're buying raw materials from us. We have become, when Ronald Reagan came into office, the United States was the classic definition of an industrialized country. We were the largest exporter of finished goods and the largest importer. importer of raw materials in the world. In other words, we brought in nickel and iron ore and whatnot, and we shipped out cars and computers. That was when Reagan came into office. Reagan came into office, and Tom Friedman published, you know, the Olive Tree and the Lexus, and all this insanity began. And we are now today the world's largest exporter of raw materials and the world's largest importer of finished goods. We have completely done a 180 reversal.